Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, my good friend over there in New York City, but not for long. His name is Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, the dream. It's wide broken. Seemed like all was lost, Ty. What would be the future, Ty? Could you pay the cost? You wonder, will there ever be, and this is rivalry week, a second time around?
Ooh. It sounds familiar, but I don't think I... Are you going way back in the archive again?
This is pretty far. This is not 80s, but it's pretty far back. It's not Belle Biv DeVoe. Way back.
I have no idea.
So the chorus to this song is step by step, day by day, a fresh start over, a different hand to play. The deeper we fall, the stronger we stay.
We'll make it better. Second time around.
So it's step by step from...
I was going to say.
Hit ABC show.
All right. Yeah. Well, I didn't know you were branching out into TV theme songs, but...
You never do.
Yeah. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us a little bit earlier this week on the podcast, as we mentioned on our Sunday recap show. Because folks are traveling, Dan, you included, traveling cross-country to get back to the homestead in Southern California for a few days. But wherever you may be headed... This Thanksgiving, we wanted to make sure you had plenty of time to listen and digest and get ready for all the college football action afoot. We've got the Egg Bowl on Thursday night, got a couple of big games on Friday, a ton of big games on Saturday. It is rivalry week, Dan.
And what should we do just overall? How should we think about what these teams have done in regard to wins and losses, Ty?
Generally, you throw out the records, right?
I don't think we can do that for every game.
No. We're going to play it once at the top as sort of like an umbrella and overarching sound clip to rule them all.
Yes. Yeah, so as you listen to each successive preview, know that we are throwing the records out for all of these games. Even if they're not traditional or long-standing rivalries, just know this. There are no records on this show. We are post-record during this rivalry week.
Post-record, indeed. That's what you do on Rivalry Week. We'd like to thank everyone out there who is sending in their stories to win a free shirt.
Oh, my God.
We've gotten some incredible accounts so far of how people listen to the Solid Verbal, where they've listened, how they found us. I'm not going to reveal any of my favorites so far. I don't want to discourage other people from writing in to tell their version of events, but... Suffice to say, right now, it's been pretty impressive. I've enjoyed thoroughly.
There are some people tickling your brain where you like it. And same here. Same with me. There have been a couple that I have read. And once again, we ask people to send in their submissions of where and how they listen to the show, if there's any unique ways. And we are giving away a shirt to the best answers that we like, the people with the best answers. So keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and check out the subreddit at reddit.com/r/solidverbal. On that note,
yes,
we have breaking news.
Boop, 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 boop. Is Chip Kelly joining our show? Is he? He is the third host now. We have swooped in, made Chip Kelly an offer he couldn't refuse, and he is just going to hang out with me in the little multimedia room at the Vox Media office.
Cool, he's going to be the awkward third wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Chip Kelly right now is an analyst for ESPN. Before that, he coached the Eagles. Before that, he coached the Niners. I'm sure I mixed up the order there. Before that, he coached the Oregon Ducks. Before that, he had, gosh, what were his responsibilities at New Hampshire?
He was the offensive coordinator at New Hampshire.
Guy's been around. He's been a college football coach from sea to shining sea.
Mm-hmm. Amber waves of grain.
And now it seems as if there's a bit of a duel going on, at least if you're to believe the rumors, between the opening at Florida and the new opening that we found out about during our show on Sunday out there at UCLA, Dan. What is the latest?
He is eyeing that Montana job that looks like it just came open. No, the latest is nobody really knows. You know, there was a story that Florida went up to New Hampshire to meet with him last night. We're recording this Monday evening and did not come away with a signature on any sort of dotted line. And now UCLA, you know, that story broke during our show that they are moving on. They are relieving Jim Mora of his duties as head coach. And I think Jed Fish will be the interim coach for the Cal game. And everybody is sort of hitching their wagon right now to Chip Kelly for one of those two jobs. If he is going to take a job, those seem to be the jobs that, given his history in the Pac-12 and Pac-10, I guess, and the fact that Florida is such an attractive job and the most attractive job in the market, and it doesn't appear that he's going back to the NFL anytime soon, that those seem to be the jobs competing for, the schools competing for his services. Now, if you're Florida, you don't have to sell a ton. You're high profile. The recruiting is very, very convenient in state and around that state. And there are resources available to him, not unlike what he had at Oregon.
Right. Yeah.
If you're looking at UCLA for that job, and I think it was time to move on from Mora. I think that was probably for the best. If you're UCLA, the attractive thing is you're not in a fishbowl type situation in the way that you would be in the SEC. You're not even the biggest job in your own city. The facilities are new and upgraded. I think it was the same, I don't know, it was the architect or builder of the Oregon facilities that are beautiful. So UCLA has modernized quite recently. And you're just, you can do your own thing, and he is probably going to be given more power, which, if you followed his trajectory with the Philadelphia Eagles,
didn't work out great.
Didn't work out for the Eagles, but that's something that he probably appreciates. You know, you have more power as a college coach anyhow, just in controlling who is on the roster, but he may not have the same type of obligations at UCLA because, listen, if UCLA can get Chip Kelly, they'll let him do whatever.
Well, that's the point. The point is he probably has a little bit more leeway at UCLA. Plus, it's a quadrant of the country with which he is intimately familiar.
Yep.
Given his time at Oregon, you have to believe he knows the lay of the land. A lot of his premier talent came from Southern California.
There was a good chunk of talent from Southern California, but he had it to spend a lot more time recruiting nationally and regionally at Oregon because of the distance from everything. And, you know, some of the best players were Texas. You know, he went out east. You know, Jairus Byrd's from Missouri and stuff like that. UCLA, you don't have that type of struggle.
If I were him, I would pick UCLA. But that's just me. And I don't know if it's necessarily a better job.
But it's about fit.
I think it's about fit. And I think the situation, given where Chip Kelly's been, it might be a better fit for him. But I'm not his agent, and he hasn't asked for my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, I don't at this time see other jobs we, you know, have talked about and people have speculated about opening up, be it Nebraska or Arizona State or Texas A&M, Arkansas. I don't think any of those are realistic players at this time for his services. The other, I think, wild card here that is also quite realistic, maybe he just doesn't take a job this year.
Yeah, well, that's maybe it. Maybe UCLA decides to go with Jeff Fisher. That was a new rumor, too.
Yeah, they go Jeff Fisher. Florida does, you know, I don't know what their backup plans in what order they might be, but if it's
Dan Mullen,
Scott Frost or Willie Taggart or Dan Mullen, sure. You know, maybe Chip Kelly is happy to just hang out in New Hampshire, hang out in Bristol, Connecticut for ESPN, and let next year unfold. Who knows?
Florida probably has more high-profile options than UCLA, but both are intriguing jobs.
Yeah, but Florida, there's a lot more pressure for Florida and the administrators at Florida.
It's pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Big time.
To get this right after the McElwain thing flamed out so spectacularly.
All right, what else do we got here? I see that Baker Mayfield is not starting this week, and he won't be the captain, but he will play at home in a game against West Virginia, where West Virginia will be without Will Grier. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Will Grier is maybe coming back for bowl game. I think that's uncertain at this time after his pretty brutal injury to his hand. It's fine. It's a slap on the wrist. Baker Mayfield, once again, it was a dumb, immature move. And there is some hand-wringing about, oh, well, this is not befitting of the Heisman Trophy.
He needs to go full Rick Vaughn, like we talked about on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Full Rick Vaughn.
Yeah, he'll play. Oklahoma's going to win. It's fine.
The other thing, and then we'll, I promise, move on to talk about football. Did you see this little squabble or kerfuffle, whatever you want to call it, Texas officials talking about...
Scuttlebutt,
right. How they don't want to play. They don't want to renew the rivalry with Texas A&M in a bowl game.
I like this because every, 5 months, there's a new story where you come away thinking, ooh, Texas is scared. And then 5 months later, ooh, Texas A&M is scared. And then 5 months later, ooh, Texas is scared. I love it. They have to play.
One thing in college football that really never gets old, when a team doesn't play a quasi-rival, in this case, a big-time rival, because of some conference move, and there is hand-wringing that goes on for decades about whose fault it is that the rivalry is no longer a thing.
Yeah, we don't have border war. We don't have backyard brawl. Well, I think backyard brawl is coming back soon, but rough. Just play. Just kiss, guys. Get it over with.
On that note, we got games to get to. It's Rivalry Week.
Dan, time, help. I need picks of the week.
So, okay, we have to take a knee and really think about how we want to approach our window of opportunity in week 13.
Oh, yeah. It's a long, long week of gaming and windowing.
Thursday is Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. There's a game at night. All of Thursday should be a window of opportunity for you and yours. Go, eat, drink, be merry, send us pictures. Hopefully, if you're our friend Peter down in D.C., you're not lighting the house on fire with a deep-fried turkey. He didn't last year. He told me that he's doing two this year. It was so successful a year ago. So hopefully, he remains safe. Everyone out there remains safe. You enjoy your holiday window of opportunity on Thursday.
Thaw your turkeys, people. It's not a euphemism.
As for Friday, because we do have a lot of Friday games going on, I am very curious in what goes on at noon between Miami and Pitt. We will talk about that game.
Mm-hmm.
I am very curious to see what goes on. Actually, in the later game, maybe it's just me, but the Commonwealth Cup between Virginia Tech and Virginia. I double down on Virginia. I like them outright. I talked about it on the Sunday show. I'm just very interested in that game because I like Bronco Mendenhall when he came on the program. And obviously, a 6-5 season so far has been a huge revelation for the Hoos.
A lot of ups and downs, but yeah.
I'm interested in that. So, you know, if those games aren't of interest to you, even if they are, you can do whatever you want on Friday and you'll be fine. Most people have off. If not, take off. Enjoy the day at home.
You're just going to gloss over UCF-USF?
The War on I-4, yes.
That might be the game of the weekend outside of the Iron Bowl, maybe?
It may be called by our friend Adam Amin as well, if I
it
saw
is being
correctly.
Called by Adam Amin. Yeah.
He does have
network
those
television.
Games. On Saturday, though, there aren't a whole lot of windows. Maybe later, if you're going to go out and do anything on the weekend, but I don't think you want to miss Ohio State, Michigan, or Georgia Tech. You definitely don't want to miss the Iron Bowl between Alabama and Auburn. And then as you get into the later hours of Saturday, you've got Clemson at South Carolina. Could be interesting. Notre Dame at Stanford. Some bowl ramifications, but probably a boring football game. At 8 p.m., the Apple Cup could be fun. But I think as a whole, the more interesting games are earlier in the day. So I'm inclined to say on Saturday, anytime after dinner would be a good time to say. Anytime after the Iron Bowl, let's say, would be a good time to target to go out and be amongst the people.
Yeah, I like that little triplet, though. The Notre Dame-Stanford Apple Cup and Battle for the Palmetto State, Clemson, South Carolina. I like that.
I don't know what that means, but...
I just go take care of what you need to take care of. Sleep in after eating leftovers. Make some leftover turkey sandwich. I'm not going to want the cranberry sauce, so there's more for you. Build yourself a nice sandwich. Watch some football.
All right. I'll leave it at that, Dan. We got to get to talk about some college football action. Let's start with the game. Can you imagine a game? It's so big, they just call it the game.
The game.
The game.
Just the best rappers, the best college football rivalries, just the game.
Ohio State, 9-2, a 12-point road favorite at Michigan. Michigan's 8-3. This one's at high noon. It's on Fox. Here is the lay of the land. In case you haven't listened the previous 12 weeks, what we got going on here is that Ohio State's going to play Wisconsin for the Big Ten championship. Regardless of how this one ends up, they are playing in that game. So if Michigan is out to spoil anything, it really truly would be Ohio State's playoff chances.
Correct.
Which are already kind of on life support, but there's definitely enough of a media drumbeat behind the Buckeyes that it could certainly end up happening if things go according to plan, if they're able to get a little bit of help in front of them. Based on what we saw last week against Wisconsin, I am not feeling too optimistic that Michigan can be that spoiler. Even in a perfect world where Brandon Peters is healthy, I don't know if he's healthy, but if he comes back right and he's healthy, even if Michigan gets a few turnovers, if they flip the field, if they make some plays on special teams, like all of that could go in their direction. And I still have next to no confidence that they've got enough offense when they need it to outscore Ohio State in this game. So I'm not feeling very optimistic about their chances here. I like Ohio State a lot in this game.
Sure. So presumably, after being at least quasi-knocked out, Brandon Peters won't play. We assume that when there's not a ton on the line that Michigan is not going to take chances. Michigan shouldn't take chances with his health either way.
No.
And I saw that he was in the concussion protocol, so it would be very strange, I think, to see Brandon Peters play this week, but who knows? I know Wilton Spate was evaluated and not cleared last week and will be evaluated once again this week, but I'd have to assume there is a pretty good chance it's a John O'Korn game for Michigan. The good news for the Wolverines is it's still basically impossible to over and over sustain offensive drives and score on this defense. It's still an excellent defense that Wisconsin, near the end of the game, they were able to poke some holes into, but it was by no means a wire-to-wire offensive effort, an impressive offensive effort from the Badgers. And the bad news for Michigan is Ohio State has an excellent offense, mostly excellent, when they give the ball to and trust offensive skill talent like, you know, J.K. Dobbins, Mike Weber. They've got good receivers. They've gotten some good tight end play this year and not relying on J.T. Barrett for a ton of carries. We've been over that a ton.
Yep.
Who last year, arguably, and it's tough because there are a few examples, had the worst game of his career against Michigan and Don Brown. Granted, it's a totally new defense, but in terms of talent, but it is still Don Brown calling the defense, and a ton of experience came back from last year's team in the rotational guys. So something to be concerned about. So I think you would agree, if you want to beat the Ohio State defense, you better be able to throw, right?
That
Baker
accurate,
Mayfield, yeah. Even yep. Nate Stanley in that game,
yep.
Offensively, ton of success through the air. Michigan can't do that.
They cannot throw the football.
No matter who is in there at quarterback. Correct. But, Ty.
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me you're going to go Michigan.
A good defense. Did I say, are we dealing in the realm of facts? Good defense for Michigan. Yes.
That is factually correct. Yes.
At home. Are we still on the same
factually correct? Also factually correct. Yes.
Okay. Rivalry game. Correct.
Definite rivalry game. You got to throw the records out in a game correct. Like this.
What do I do? I'm not going to speak for you. What do I do?
You generally lock it up, don't you?
I'm just going to take those points. I'm going to take a good defense.
Be a man,
at home,
Dan!
A good defense at home in a rivalry game, going against JT Barrett, going against the Beckmeyer system, in a big game on the road versus a good defense, 27-17 Ohio State. Michigan covers.
I've got 27-13.
Okay.
Ohio State. And I think Ohio State covers in this football game. Ohio State's won the last five games here. It will not be easy to go into Michigan Stadium and win, but look, Ohio State's just better. They're the better football team.
For sure.
There could be a bit of a look-ahead factor, knowing that Wisconsin's on deck, and this game is ultimately meaningless. I'm laying out a hypothetical. Shut up.
I say zero.
I said could be. I was hedging, because this is the game. It's the game, man. You get up for the game. I don't think that look-ahead factor will be in play here. I like Ohio State, but I think a little lower scoring, 27-13.
Okay. So we disagree, kind of.
Also at high noon, this one on ABC, we've got the Georgia Bulldogs at 10-1, an 11-point road favorite at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's 5-5. They call this one the clean, old-fashioned hate game, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds proper. It sounds Southern, but it sounds tenacious.
Yeah. Efficient. Destructive.
You may remember the game last year. Georgia Tech went over to Athens. They came back from down 13 points in the fourth quarter to win this one, 28-27. Maybe Georgia's looking to get a little bit of revenge. Maybe Georgia's looking ahead at the SEC championship game. Could play it either way, depending on what kind of mood you're in. Either the glass is half full, glass is half empty. That SEC championship game is going to be a big deal in a week, and it's lurking. It is lurking. They don't know who they play yet. We're going to talk about the Iron Bowl next. Since last year's game, though, what I want to note is this. These teams have kind of gone in opposite directions a little bit because Georgia's gotten a lot better.
Sure.
A lot better. They're still very much in the thick of this playoff chase. And Georgia Tech, on the other hand, has definitely taken a step back, which wasn't a surprise. I think we expected it.
Somewhat.
What jumps out to me is that Georgia Tech is still plucky. They're only 5-5. I get it. But they lost by one on the road to Miami. They beat Wake by 14, which is looking like a better and better win. They lost by 14 to Clemson, but didn't get blown out. It wasn't like Clemson ran away from them in that football game. Right. They lost a shootout against Virginia. They beat Virginia Tech. They're not consistent, but they're 5-5. And is it a stretch for them to maybe possibly also hang in there with Georgia in a rivalry game? At home underdog. What do you think?
So interestingly, for like, what, a month now? 5 weeks? Something like that. There's been this like very low drumbeat of like, well, hey, what if Georgia runs the table but loses to Alabama? What if Georgia runs the, what if Georgia loses one but they beat Alabama? And there's just like this glossing over of the Tech game, right? Yeah. Like, we're given this, you know, this goes to Georgia. This is their rightful, they lost last year, but this is their rightful game. They've already won this game, right? And I don't know if that affects things a little bit. I don't know if it's, I think the coaches will be focused. I think the players will be focused, but there is this sort of Georgia's in this national conversation. This Georgia Tech game, this is not something we should be discussing. And it's on the, you know, quote unquote road. There'll be a lot of Georgia fans there. It's about an hour and a half away, I believe, a drive. So it's not a full on road game. Georgia Tech is much better at home. Those big wins from this year have happened at home. And the defense, through the air at least, has improved. They limit big passes, and it's not like Georgia's going to be winging it around a ton. They're just very efficient throwing the ball. Run defense is a little bit suspect for Georgia Tech. I actually, there's part of me that after Auburn exposed a little bit of defensive vulnerability of Georgia, there's part of me that wanted to take Georgia Tech outright.
I know. I was so, so close to doing it because you're right. You're absolutely right. Georgia's defense is really good.
Yeah.
It's still going to be the best unit on the field. And I don't think Tech's going to push them around the way Auburn did.
Right.
But you are right to say that Georgia Tech can learn a little from the way Auburn game planned for Georgia. They can run a lot of the same concepts that we saw in that game.
Yes. The problem is I don't think they can couple it with passes. But
well, right.
That's another full-on issue. But here's the thing about Georgia Tech. They're all right. They're pretty good. I hated what they look like in the second half last week against Duke, so I don't have the confidence to take Tech at home against a very good Georgia team, but I think they can keep it close. I think Georgia edges them out. I have dogs 24-20, so I have Tech covering at home.
We really are one mind, aren't we?
Simpatico.
We are one mind. I've got Georgia winning a close one 28-24.
All right, so we agree.
Before we go any further and talk about the Iron Bowl, we need to talk about how hard it is sometimes to find a dress shirt.
Oh, so difficult.
Something's always off. You buy it off the rack. It doesn't fit the way you want. Thankfully, ordering a custom fit shirt has never been easier with our good friends over at Proper Cloth. You've heard about them a bunch of times now on the podcast. Glad they stopped by for our Thanksgiving extravaganza here, because at propercloth.com, you can easily create a custom shirt in just seconds. All you got to do is answer 10 easy questions. Dan, you have one. You love it. Will you be wearing it this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to camera guy Dave's wedding in mid-December, and I will 100% be wearing it.
You can choose from over 20 color styles, 10 cuff styles, 500 different fabrics, from classic to business. Completely customize your shirt and get the style that you want. The team over there at Proper Cloth, they work day and night. They find the best fabric producers around the globe and only buy the stuff that meets their high quality standards. Best of all, they guarantee a perfect fit. So if you order, you get it, you don't like it, doesn't fit, whatever. They will remake it for you for free. It's the future of shirts. We've been talking about it all year. Get in on this right now. Go to propercloth.com/solid. Stop wearing shirts that don't fit. Start looking your best at propercloth.com/solid. Enter the gift code solid and you will save $20 on your first shirt. $20.
I have not noticed any sort of weird baggy and lumpiness in this shirt. It just fits my weird body and it's wonderful.
Let's go to the Iron Bowl, Dan.
Yes.
I'm using hushed and revered tones here to talk about this football game.
Very important.
The Iron Bowl, Saturday, CBS, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 12:30 on the West Coast. We've got Alabama at 11-0, -4.5 at Auburn. Auburn at 9-2. It seems like they've been able to put things together, Dan. The Tigers are hungry in this football game. How you feeling?
I feel wonderful, Ty. I always feel wonderful. So we know a lot about these two teams. We've seen them in big games, Auburn more so than Alabama. Alabama, there's no real sort of talent and scheme weakness. There's a health weakness right now, and that will be present in this game. But I don't think there's a strong weakness for Alabama, if that's such a phrase exists. You can make an okay case for Jalen Hurts perhaps struggling a bit in obvious passing downs, throwing downfield on 3rd-and-9s, 3rd-and-12s, whatever. But outside of that, which does not happen often with their running game, there's nothing you can point to that says, okay, if Auburn can exploit this one thing, then it's gravy for the Tigers. Auburn has the number one S&P Plus pass defense in the country. And that's a sort of concert between the pass rush and a very good secondary, and the linebackers are everywhere. And I expect them to give the Alabama offense a good amount of trouble at home in a very hostile environment. Multi-sport field hostile? No, Ty, don't be ridiculous. But I like this Auburn team a good amount. I like the fact that Alabama... For Auburn, I don't like this in general in life. Alabama's beat up in the linebacking core. I know a lot of people are going to make a big deal of this. They're starting, you know, Dylan Moses, the very, very talented true freshman at middle linebacker, you know, a crazy important role in this Alabama defense, the quarterback of the defense, no doubt about it. But I feel good about Gus Malzahn and Chip Lindsey scheming something up, maybe not successfully for four quarters, but being good enough to stress the linebacking core out that is pretty beat up sideline to sideline. And if I am just going to simplify things, Ty, I like Jarrett Stidham. I like Kerryon Johnson. Wow. I like improvement of the Auburn offensive line. I'm going to simplify it because sometimes, always, I tend to overthink things. We have a good pass defense. We have a good defense, a good red zone defense, a great red zone defense in Auburn. I will take the chances and I will say, good defense at home in a rivalry game. I'm going to take the points and play that Yako's home dog.
Dog of the week.
Wardam Auburn outright, 28-27.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Wow. That would be a seismic shift in the world of college football if that were to happen on Saturday. Talk right here.
I know. You're struggling. I understand that. But yeah, that's I'm going with my gut.
Here's the Auburn doomsday scenario. You're buying into this because if Auburn beats Alabama, they win the SEC West, they head off to Atlanta, they get a rematch against Georgia. If they beat Georgia for the second time, no doubt about it. They're in the playoffs at that point.
No doubt about it.
They would be in the playoffs. So here's a little bit of context on the Iron Bowl. Alabama has won the last three Iron Bowls by an average margin of 15 points. 15 points. I would think that this game's going to be a lot closer. Vegas thinks it's going to be a lot closer. This much, I think we are in agreement. Where I disagree a little bit is when you talk about Alabama's linebacking core and how worrisome it is. Now, there's no doubt they're beat up.
Yep.
That is factually correct. And I think you're also... correct to assume that Gus Malzahn's going to find ways to put pressure on young Dylan Moses. He's going to try and stretch out that linebacking core going side to side. They'll probably do a lot of what they did to Georgia.
Sure.
Stretch him out, run it up the middle with Kerryon Johnson. I would expect you'd see a lot of similar concepts here. But let's keep in mind something we said on Sunday. Dylan Moses was balling out against Mercer.
Sure.
And I know it's just Mercer. But again, his stat line, 11 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, a pick. That's pretty good. And it sounds like Bama might also get Christian Miller back for this game. He tore his bicep in week 1 against Florida State. If he's available, that would help a linebacking core that needs it right now. What concerns me the most in this game is not Alabama's linebacking core. It's Alabama's offense. And it's for a lot of the reasons that you already described. They have not played a defense this good all year. They haven't.
That's true.
Auburn, we know, can shut down a really good rushing attack. We saw them do it against Georgia. If you want to go all the way back to week 2, Auburn was really good in holding down Clemson to just 14 points. Maybe a different Clemson team then, mm-hmm. but still a very talented, playoff-worthy roster at this point.
Defending champ, yeah.
The question is whether or not they can stop Alabama, because Alabama is kind of a hybrid of both Clemson and Georgia. They run a combination of those two schemes. Mm-hmm. This is a great football game. I'm going to come down on the opposite side of this one as you. I trust Jalen Hurts more in a big game than I do Jarrett Stidham.
Okay.
He's been in more situations like that. Alabama has a knack for pulling out games like this. I am going to say Alabama 27-22, and keep this in mind. The point spread's 4.5. I came up with that score before I knew what the point spread was.
Ooh, saucy.
So there
you
go.
No, I guess I didn't consider what Dylan Moses did against Mercer, so now I feel like a fool, Ty. The pride of making Georgia. So
hypothetically speaking,
yeah.
What happens if Auburn does win out? What happens if they beat Alabama? What mm-hmm. happens if they, let's say, go on to win the SEC championship?
Mm-hmm.
Does Alabama still get in the playoff?
So Alabama would finish the season 11-1 without an appearance, similar to what we saw last year with Ohio State not making the conference championship and yet getting into the playoff because of circumstance and matchups and weighing various factors against each other. So I suppose it matters what happens in the ACC championship and in the Big Ten championship, but I would say there is an okay chance. Sure. I think they're in a very real conversation.
I think they're in regardless.
That would mean two SEC teams, pretty much.
Yeah, it would. Okay.
Unless Auburn were to get shelled by Georgia, and then you're not feeling like which team is actually better, and you just take Alabama. I don't know.
Saturday at 7:30 on ESPN, we've got Clemson. They're at 10-1. They are a 2-touchdown favorite on the road in Columbia against South Carolina. South Carolina, a nice season so far. They're 8-3. 8-3. It hasn't always been pretty, but in the Palmetto Bowl, you kind of throw out the records, don't you?
You absolutely have to, Ty.
Do you know the difference between a palm tree and a palmetto?
Not off the top of my head, Ty. My horticulture experience is limited.
The palmetto tree is shorter. And it has a trunk that grows more horizontally, Dan.
I'm looking right
You're
now.
Are you taking notes?
I am. I'm flashing in front of my eyes. And
the palm
I'm
tree
confused.
Also produces a larger, heavier fruit, whereas palmettos grow smaller fruits that look like berries.
I'm a palm tree guy, I gotta say.
I read more about this than I did the actual football game. Full disclosure.
I'm learning so much. No, I'm looking at the palmetto. It's a nice tree. I'm still going to side palm.
A lot on the line here. As you know, a lot on the line. Clemson mm-hmm. staring down the barrel of what appears to be a monster matchup next week against Miami in the ACC title game. So maybe a little bit of a look-ahead spot here. It's also on the road. Columbia is going to be rocking. This feels like another situation like we described earlier with Georgia Tech, where everyone is just looking forward to next week and glossing over the fact that South Carolina's got 8 wins. They might not be the sexiest team on offense. Lord knows they're coached by Will Muschamp.
Right.
But this is a rivalry game. Strange things happen. I don't think that South Carolina is good enough to beat Clemson, because if they're going to win this game, then it needs to be a defensive slugfest. And Clemson always wins games that end up being defensive slugfests.
Right.
Could this game be close? I think this game could be close. I think this game will be closer. I'm saying 24-13 Clemson wins, but South Carolina at home, I think they cover.
Yeah, I don't think this matchup is being overlooked, perhaps in the same way that Georgia Tech is, at least from afar. I think because everybody sort of looks at Clemson in the controlling its own destiny much more so than Georgia, even when Georgia was undefeated, just because of looming Auburn, looming Alabama, potentially. And Clemson is just in control, even with the loss to Syracuse. I know they're on the road. I'm not crazy about the South Carolina defense. They're fine. They're improved. The talent's getting better in Columbia. I am just, there's nothing to sell me right now on anything that South Carolina does really well. So I am just going to roll with Clemson here to take care of business, because there's no reason to doubt Clemson in a take care of business, big game to get to another big game, the way this team and defense is constructed. So I have Clemson 33-17, barely covering, but not really ever having this game be in doubt.
The Palmetto Bowl, a great
Palmetto
name.
Bowl. Yeah.
Saturday at 8 p.m. on ABC, we've got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at 9-2 going on the road to Stanford. They are a 2.5-point favorite. Notre Dame's out of playoff contention, so is Stanford, which means that at long last, Daniel, I can give you my 100% honest assessment of this football game.
Please,
I'm ready. No superstitions. I am free. I am unfettered to talk about Notre Dame football, because if they lose, so what?
If they lose, they go, what, 9-3 before a bowl game?
9-3 would be a good year.
We talked about this before the season, and my question to you as a Notre Dame, I wouldn't say diehard, but a fan, is if Notre Dame goes 9-3, is that 8-4, 9-3? And your reaction anytime I would broach that general prediction was like, sure, yeah, fine, I'll take that.
I'm fine with 9-3.
Yeah.
I'm not rooting for 9-3, but I'm fine
but you'd
with
be,
it.
Would you be let down now?
No, I'm let down that they got creamed by Miami.
Right. There wasn't a lot of fight in that game, even in a losing effort.
That was the real letdown. If they lose this week, that would be a bummer. Be a bad way to go out. They'll still be in a decent bowl game against a fun opponent. Still, I think, ahead of schedule after going 4-8 a year ago and kind of retooling the entire coaching staff. I'm fine with 9-3.
Yeah, especially halfback pass last week away from potentially losing that game. Ooh,
I scared crap out of me.
It put so many emotions into me, both hoping that the pass would be completed and, oh my God, you can't lose like that. So you survive that. That's a win and a half.
Here's what worries me about this game. If Notre Dame's not able to play Smash Mouth and beat your brains in with the run, it's really unclear to me what the game plan is.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me a couple weeks ago how confident I was at Brandon Wimbush to like lead a drive in crunch time. I think I'm less confident now than I was then. And I was never confident to begin with.
Yeah, some of the throws that Sam Darnold made in the comfortable win USC had over Stanford, it seems like Brandon Wimbush may struggle with at this point. There might be some confidence issues.
Oh, there's something going on. I daresn't call it the yips because I don't know if it's gotten to that degree quite yet, but he doesn't look comfortable.
He's not a finished product.
Right. He has here and there, but he's very much not a finished product. He's still working on it. Right now, I just don't have confidence in him. The big offseason question for me is whether or not they can get him to a point where he's more consistent in the passing game. And it's no secret, if you watch Notre Dame to any degree this college football season, you know that that was sort of the Achilles heel on offense. The passing game was quasi a mess. It really was. So if they can get him to the point where he can make throws more reliably in the offseason, they can come back in 2018 and be much stronger a contender, especially, hey, they're still pretty young on defense. They've been lights out all year on defense. I think there's a lot to be excited about. Notre Dame wins a close one in this football game. I think they give up a big play or two to Bryce Love because everybody does. It's just what Bryce Love does. But otherwise, I'm not all that concerned about them being able to hold down whatever it is Stanford's trying to do on offense, because Stanford is just not good on offense. Give me Notre Dame to cover on the road 24-21, but a close game.
Yeah, these teams are not identical, but there are a lot of similarities.
They're brothers from another mother.
Yeah, they're, you know, the offensive line is definitely a strength for both of these teams. Disappointing quarterback play at times in bigger games. Huge home run hitting running backs, and both offenses reliant on more chunk plays than just chipping down the field and finally putting it in for six. Defensively, I think Notre Dame has been in a better place. I think Stanford's defense has been somewhat disappointing, but is okay. They're not a disaster. I think Notre Dame definitely has the advantage there. But, Ty, you neglected to mention one thing.
What's that?
Post-option team. We played against a big, angry, bulldozing offensive line in Stanford. Do you think there is that... I mean, I don't know if it's an option body blow. I don't know what it's called, but that post-Navy defensive front dealing with the misdirection, with the lower blocking, with just the frustration that comes with being on the field. What, 42 minutes? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Just you're talking about a worn-down team going on the road to play against a team happy to take 3.5-4 yards of play. And I wonder if that sort of wears on Notre Dame up front. A very talented front, mind you. I just wonder if there's an element of that.
You're talking about that post-naval drip.
The post-naval drip. I could just see if Notre Dame screws up and tries to arm tackle Bryce Love 2.5-3 times, that's 20 points, Ty.
I know.
He just set a record for 50-plus yard runs in a season.
24-21
Notre
Dame.
And he's a little bit hobbled.
24-21 Notre Dame.
I have this 24-20 Stanford.
You love Stanford.
No, I like Stanford at home much more than I like Stanford overall.
You know what I'm going to do for you for Christmas? I'm going to go back. I'm going to pull all that preseason audio where you had Stanford in your playoff.
You know what, Ty?
Just like you did to me with Michigan State, I'm going to pull that audio for you and wrap it up.
It doesn't matter what Stanford does against Notre Dame. If Washington beats Wazoo, Stanford's in the Pac-12 title game.
That's a perfect segue,
so I don't feel terribly off in making that pick.
All right. Well, you mentioned the Apple Cup. Saturday at 8 p.m. on Fox, we've got the Apple Cup.
Mm-hmm.
A fun game. Washington State at 9-2 on the road in Husky Stadium. Against Washington, also 9-2. As you mentioned, if Washington State wins this football game, they are in the Pac-12 championship game
North
against
champs.
USC. If Washington wins the football game, that means Stanford is going to play against the USC Trojans. So we'll find out more after this mm-hmm. football game, the status of the Pac-12 championship game. In the meantime, though, it's worth noting that Chris Peterson has now been part of 3 Apple Cups. He's won all 3 times. Last year, 45-17. The year before, 45-10. The year before, 31-13. I do think Washington State's better this year. I do think Washington is more vulnerable than perhaps we expected a couple weeks ago. Still, I like Washington more, and I like them more because of their defense and because of their running game. Even though Washington State has been pretty good against the run this season, got to give credit where it's due, I like Washington to win by a 31-21 score.
Who shines in that game?
I think it's probably going to be Jake Browning. We hear a lot about Miles Gaskin. We know that Washington wants to run the football. Jake Browning was really good in crunch time a week ago. And I would love to see him go out there and have a nice 4-touchdown, no interception day where he leads his team down the field and is commanding with his presence in the pocket. I think he can do that against this Washington State defense. So it's not so much an unsung hero. It's just maybe not the answer you'd expect. Give me Jake Browning.
I got a nugget for you, Ty. Wazoo's punt team is bad. And that is not good against Washington's punt return team because Dante Pettis is a record-setting punt returner, and there can be flipped points. I anticipate there may be, but in any case, just looking at these offenses and defenses and situations, whatever, there's a lot of good news for Washington State. One, Washington State really does do a good job against the run. A couple too many big plays, but they should be able to play reasonably well against a beat-up Washington offensive line with a very good defensive line that's not huge, but I think is built to succeed against a unit like Washington's. Hercules Mataafa is an All-American caliber lineman. And Washington State, for whatever reason, they have bounced back nicely after... When Washington State loses, they lose ugly. Whether it was the Cal game, whether it was the Arizona game, they go on the road, they lose ugly. This is not the same type of road test. It's going to be a very hectic and chaotic Husky Stadium, but they're not traveling to Tucson. They're not traveling to Cal, whatever. It's not as far. Washington State's coming off a bye, which if you're going to go on the road in a rivalry week situation, have a bye beforehand. Just have that bye. That is nice. Luke Falk has gotten himself together after having that down game against Arizona. I think, you know, beating Stanford was a step in the nice direction. Ty, I know you like weather. Mm. It's going to be nasty in this game, Ty.
I think that favors Washington.
I think potentially it does favor Washington, but I'm not crazy about what I've seen from Washington these past couple of weeks.
All right.
I'm just not.
Okay.
I am going to go with Wazoo Disruption. You're undefeated until you're not, Chris Peterson. I'm going with Wazoo disrupting things. I'm going to say, yeah, outright, coming off a bye. Jeez. 21-17 Wazoo. How about that?
Jeez, okay. We disagree.
How about it, Ty?
Disagree.
We disagree.
All right, Dan, before we go any further, just want to remind you why fall is my favorite time of year. Because there's always a game to watch. Lord knows there are a bunch of games to watch on Thanksgiving weekend. And now, thanks to Net10 Wireless, you can always get access to the latest scores and highlights right on your smartphone. They give you a choice of flexible plans, nationwide coverage on one of America's largest and most dependable networks. And now, for a limited time, you can get double data for life on unlimited plans, starting as low as just $35. With their plans, you can pick the phone, you can pick the plan that fits your needs, and you get the added lifetime value of double data, which is pretty cool. No contracts, no hidden fees. Net10 Wireless is what it's called. If you're interested, go to net10wireless.com. That's N-E-T, the number 10, wireless.com. Check out the terms and restrictions of service and get more information on double data for life today. It truly is a game changer. Let's get to some other fun rivalry game, shall we?
Let's
go to the Egg Bowl. It's on Thursday night at 7:30 on ESPN. Contest between Ole Miss at 5-6 and Mississippi State at 8-3. Dan, Mississippi State a 16.5 point favorite. I think our boy Nick Fitzgerald eats in this Thanksgiving Day game.
Really?
I think Mississippi State wins, but I don't think they cover because Ole Miss can score, and 16.5 is a lot of points in a rivalry game. So Mississippi State outright, Ole Miss to cover.
Man, it would be wonderful, not because we're rooting for either of these teams, but for all Ole Miss went through, for all of the joy Mississippi State took from that, for Ole Miss still with an interim coach and a backup quarterback to win the Egg Bowl. I think I'm going to go with Mississippi State here. I think I have more trust in the Dogs at home in an extremely tough place to play in a rivalry spot. I didn't like the way that Ole Miss closed out the game last week against Texas A&M. So I think the momentum, yeah, I think it rides with Mississippi State. I have them winning by 20 here. I have it as like a 44-24 type game.
All right, let's move to Friday at high noon on ABC. Miami, 10-0.
Mm-hmm.
14 points the favorite on the road at Pitt. Lowly Pitt. 4-7, Dan. Could it be a trap?
It's a trap. It's a trap.
Could it be a trap? Could it be mayhem on the Monongahela?
Is that a real river?
The Allegheny and Monongahela combined to form the Ohio River.
I have been to the Pirates Stadium, which I think is, I don't know if it's along all three or if it's along one.
Well, they used to have Three Rivers Stadium, but they got rid of that and they built PNC Park. Yeah, which is now only along one of the rivers.
I will tell you this. I may have had a better just experience and visual. I loved my experience at PNC Park. Now, obviously, the Pitt Panthers play across the street, but apropos of nothing. I love that stadium.
Why does this rivalry not have a real name? We need a name for this rivalry.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Ty. And I have a couple of... So there is a connection between these two teams. So I have a couple of suggestions. The connection, the most obvious one that I see, Mr. David Wanstead.
Dave Wanstead, the stash, right?
Yeah. yeah, the stash was, I believe, a DC a while back of, sure, of the Canes, and obviously a head coach for Pitt. So I have this as the Wannstedt War.
The Wannstedt War.
Now, if you want to call it the Floyd of Rose, Dave, I'm okay with that.
The battle for the golden stash?
But you have to have a golden stash. Right. I guess you would have to have a pig with a mustache for the Floyd of Rose, Dave.
I still like Mayhem on the Monongahela, but as a longer-lasting rivalry game name, I could go with Floyd of Rose, Dave.
The SEO is tough.
The SEO is very tough.
Okay. The Floyd of Rose, Dave. Are you rolling with Miami here in a trap spot?
No, I'm going with Pitt plus the points.
Really? Why?
2016 Pitt beat two top five teams. That's all I got. I don't know. It's a weird spot. Miami's a big game team. Granted, Virginia's pretty good, and it seemed like they took the first half off in that football game. But I'm going to go home state. I'm going to go Pitt. I'm going to go with my gut. I didn't know what the point spread was until 5 minutes before going on the air here. So I'm going to ride this good wave of week 13 emotion. I'm going to say Pitt Panthers cover the point spread, but Miami wins a closer than expected football game, let's say 31-21.
Fair enough. I think Miami wins this game big. I don't believe Pitt is all that good. Losing the way they did last week, granted they kept it close in Blacksburg, but losing to North Carolina, losing the way they did to NC State comfortably, losing the way they did to Georgia Tech comfortably, the Pitt game against Oklahoma State was obviously a disaster and what felt like 10 years ago. I just, with a third string quarterback going against this defense, I think Miami makes it ugly early. I'm going to say 37-13 Miami.
I think Mayhem on the Monongahela.
Mayhem on the Monongahela?
Monongahela, yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Monongahela. Okay.
All right. Let's go to the Heroes game, Dan. They call it the Heroes game. Friday at 4 p.m., Fox Sports 1. We've got Iowa at 6-5, 3.5-point favorite at Nebraska. You know, the game, the way that they named it back in 2011 is very noble. They do it to honor citizen heroes, they say, from both states. Very good cause.
Okay.
I'm telling you, the true act of heroism here is that it's the last game for Nebraska. I like Iowa minus whatever. I think Nebraska just wants to get this one over with.
Yeah, I think that's right. They're ready. I'm going Iowa minus anything as well. I'm going with the Hawkeyes here to close out a very confusing season, but had a ton of really fun moments.
Friday on ABC, it's the Adam Amin game. Talked about it earlier.
The only game that matters.
We've got the USF Bulls at 9-1 on the road at the UCF Knights. They're 10-0. They call it the War on I-4.
Good name.
I like that name. UCF is minus 11. I like UCF here. I don't know if I like them by 11. 11 feels like a lot to me in a game between two good teams. I think UCF's offense is clearly the best unit on the field here, but I have confidence in the Bulls to kind of keep this one close in a game that's actually a pretty big rivalry. So let's go UCF to win this one. Higher scoring game, let's say 42-35.
So there is some bad blood. I was about to look up Taylor Swift lyrics, and then I didn't, because Willie Taggart really stepped on the throat of UCF last year, pouring gasoline in what was already a comfortable win at the end of the game, scoring an extra touchdown. So I think there is some bad blood there from UCF and Scott Frost. Scott Frost certainly has to be on some level distracted. Maybe his team isn't. I like the fact that they've become a more complete team. They're running the ball really nicely. They're playing good defense. USF is, you know, for as much attention as the schedule and Quentin Flowers got before the season, rightfully so, they've improved a ton defensively. This is a team that is outstanding against the pass. I think I'm going to go with the defense. I think defense travels. You have UCF by what, 10?
7, 42-35.
You have UCF, okay, you have UCF by a touchdown. I think USF pulls the upset. Okay. I really do. I don't know if UCF is tested in a close matchup in the way that I'd like them to be against, you know, a home run hitter in Quentin Flowers, a defense that's improved against the pass, and what if UCF can't rely on big plays? USF a little extra time playing, what, Thursday or Friday last week to prepare. I think I'm going to go with the Bulls here outright. I think they win this game 30-27.
Moving on to a Friday night game on ESPN, we've got Virginia Tech, the Hokies, at 8-3. They are a 7-point road favorite at Virginia, led by Bronco Mendenhall. This year's been a revelation. Kurt Benkert having a hell of a year. Virginia at 6-5 going to a bowl game. They call this one the Commonwealth Cup, Dan. I mentioned it on Sunday. I mentioned it at the top of the show. And I'm going to come down a little bit hard on Virginia Tech right now. They're the best bad team in the country.
Okay.
And I think Virginia's been secretly decent. So I'm doubling down. I'm making Virginia my home dog.
Ooh. The Yakos. Home dog of the week.
And not only am I going home dog, Virginia plus 7, lock of the week.
Lock of the week.
I am emptying the clip on the Hoos. If I'm wrong this game, I will find an episode in the future during which I will wear a pilgrim outfit.
We agree. I think Virginia wins this game as well. Home dogs, they're pretty good against the pass, as we saw last week with Miami. And certainly Malik Rozier went off, but they were able to make plays against the pass. I think they'll be able to do so against a struggling Virginia Tech offense that's struggling to find really anything. They've struggled to run the ball for a good chunk of this year, but the passing game has let them down a little bit outside. I mean, Cam Phillips is wonderful and we love him. But I think Virginia at home with a pretty decent defense, with some energy coming, even though the Miami game really went off the rails late, I think they are energized in such a way that there won't be a letdown factor in this rivalry matchup. So I think the Hoos take it. Let's say by, I don't know, a touchdown.
Friday at 8 p.m. on Fox, Texas Tech at Texas. We've got the Red Raiders at 5-6. We've got the Longhorns at 6-5. The Longhorns are a 10-point favorite. I think another situation here, as we talked about a few minutes ago with Nebraska, might be a situation where Texas Tech is just ready for the season to be over.
Could be.
It might be a situation like that. Meanwhile, Texas, I thought, had a really impressive win on the road at West Virginia a week ago. Granted, they knocked Will Grier out of that football game, but
yep.
Morgantown, not an easy place to play. You win by 14 on the road. That stands for something. So I think Texas is able to run all over Texas Tech in this football game, and they win comfortably, let's say 42-20.
I've got right around the same thing. We agree. I don't even know if Texas Tech scores that many points. I have 35-17.
Friday, the late game at 10:30, Fox Sports 1. It is the third longest uninterrupted rivalry in college football, behind Navy Notre Dame and behind the
that's pretty good
Farmageddon game between Iowa State and K-State. It is Cal.
Nice.
It is UCLA. UCLA is favored by 7.5 points. I think this is going to be Josh Rosen's last home game. Fair to say?
Fair.
Anytime a team loses a coach, it can get a little weird. I think UCLA will be prone to turning everything over to Josh Rosen to try and win the football game, his last home football game. And I think Cal has an opportunity here to get to a bowl game a couple years now running, where they've been sort of dreadful. I like them to sort of move the ball at will. 1 week after UCLA came out of nowhere to play defense, UCLA takes this game off and Cal sneaks one out here. Give me the Bears.
I think UCLA bombs them.
Really?
I really do. Yeah, Cal's coming. I mean, they're both coming off of a letdown loss, a close loss in rivalry games. UCLA, obviously, against USC in the Coliseum, and Cal on the road playing Stanford. Both seemed like, at times, winnable games. But I think there might be some relief in Westwood, Pasadena, whatever, with no Jim Mora, getting the Cal pass defense. I think there might be a factor of sort of, no Mora is Mora, if that makes any
Boo.
Sense. I think there is. I think I apologize to my friends, family, to everybody listening. I can do better. I know I can. I think there's going to be some relief. I think this has hung over the program for, you know, the better part of a year. Is Mora going to stay? Is he going to be let go? I'm going to go with UCLA. I'm going to go with Josh Rosen against a pretty bad defense. I think UCLA wins this game like 37-20.
We disagree. Okay, let's go to Saturday. I want to talk very quickly about a handful of games. We got to go rapid fire. Let's start at high noon on ESPN2. Indiana at 4-6. At Purdue, 5-6. Purdue -3. They call this one the old Oaken bucket. I'm going to go Purdue here. They've been a great story. I've enjoyed following their, I guess, first chapter under Jeff Brohm.
Mm-hmm.
And if they win, they go to a bowl game. They got a lot to play for in this game, plus they're at home. Give me Purdue.
I'm going to go with Purdue as well. I think I will give those 3 points. I like the fact that, and you know, Jeff Brohm and his offense gets the attention. This Purdue defense is probably a top 20-25 defense in the country. They've been excellent. So a totally underrated story against an Indiana offense that has been woefully inconsistent. I'm going to go Purdue here by 10.
Also at noon on ESPN, Florida State -5.5 at Florida. They call it the Sunshine.
You don't have to watch this game.
The Sunshine Showdown. I saw our friend Ed Ashoff over at ESPN compared this game to a failed batch of macaroni and cheese. Quote,
oh, no.
Quote, Granny's mac and cheese recipe used to be untouchable until your aunt decided to recreate it this year, and it didn't even reach subpar. Out of respect, it's on the table, but you almost wish the dog would get a hold of it before any humans consume it.
Wow, it bummed me out a little bit. Yeah, I guess I'll go...
Somebody's got to win, Dan.
Yeah, Florida wins this game in ugly fashion, 15-12. I don't know.
This could be a 19-18 kind of game. Could be a 4-2 kind of game, too.
Let's not talk about this ever again.
Who'd you pick, Florida? I'll go Florida, too. Why not?
Yeah. All right, we agree.
Saturday, 3:30, ABC, Wisconsin. 11-0. -17 at Minnesota. Minnesota playing for the right to go to a bowl game. Also playing for the right to get Paul Bunyan's axe. Minnesota got shut out 39-0 by Northwestern a week ago. You get shut out by Northwestern. What do you think happens when you play Wisconsin, Dan?
Ooh, you get smashed.
Yeah.
I think you get smashed.
Give me Wisconsin minus anything.
Yeah, I've got Wisconsin minus anything. I think they know that the margin of error against their schedule specifically means that even winning the Big Ten at 12-1, you know, losing to Minnesota, far-fetched as that may sound, and beating Ohio State, they're not in the playoff. They just aren't. So there is no letdown after that Michigan game. I think Wisconsin goes and smashes Minnesota, who will finish 5-7.
Saturday at 3:30, we've got Iowa State at 7-4. We've got Kansas State at 6-5, K-State, a 2.5-point favorite. Dan, what do we call this game?
We call this Farmageddon, Ty.
Maybe the best rivalry name out there. Farmageddon, the longest uninterrupted rivalry in college football. They've played every year since 1917. This will be the 101st consecutive meeting between the two teams. Both are headed for bowls, which is a nice story, but I am all in, and I am here waiting with open arms for Iowa State's 8th win. I could stay awake
just to hear you breathing. Did you hear that, Ty? I'm going to go Iowa State here. I don't feel great about, and I really do like Skylar Thompson and the backup to the backup to the backup. But at a certain point, Kansas State's running out of quarterbacks, and it's not going to be good because Skylar Thompson got hurt last week and came in injured to hand it off a couple of times and save that win, Jose Mesa-ish as it was. I'm going clones here to finish out their season strong in Farmageddon.
3:45 on ESPN. We've got West Virginia at Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield, not starting, but he'll play. Not captain, but...
Yeah,
he'll still be somewhat dominant, I'm sure, as West Virginia will be without Will Grier. That's obviously a rather significant loss for the Mountaineers, especially going on the road in this football game. I didn't see a point spread, but I am inclined to go Oklahoma minus whatever. I like their chances an awful lot in this game. They've got a big one the week after in the Big 12 championship game, the first annual Big 12 championship game, but... I don't think there's much of a look-ahead factor here at all. Give me the Sooners minus whatever.
Yeah, they'll just run it a ton. Rodney Anderson's wonderful, and Baker Mayfield is going to play. So, yes, I think Oklahoma has a nice day against West Virginia at home in Norman to close out the regular season.
And the last game I have on my sheet, Lord knows there are other rivalry games we're not going to get to. We're not going to talk about Louisville, Kentucky. Not going to talk much about the Civil War. I'm sure there are others. Yeah, I mean, we could go on for days and days talking about all these rivalry games, but I'm going to end it here with the Territorial Cup between Arizona and Arizona State. Two teams that were really in danger of the season coming off the swivel, and they both pulled it together in different ways. Arizona State a little bit more with defense, at least for a stretch earlier in the year. Arizona with turning the reins over to Khalil Tate. The Cats are 7-4. Sun Devils are 6-5. Both going to bowl games now. There is a particular quote that comes to mind. Perhaps you're familiar with the movie Seven, Dan.
I am.
It sums up my feelings on this game exactly. It was spoken by one Morgan Freeman. Quote, "If John Doe's head splits open and a UFO should fly out, I want you to have expected it." There are no outcomes in this game, Dan, that would surprise me. I'm going to go with my heart and go Khalil Tate minus 1.5 on the road here. Pretty much a pick 'em. Give me Arizona in a high scoring affair, 45-42.
I think that's right. I'm going to ride with the best thing in this game. I don't know what Khalil Tate's health is specifically. Didn't look like himself against Oregon, but Arizona State certainly is better at home. They have wins now over Washington and Oregon, but they have been inconsistent otherwise. Arizona is a tricky challenge, but man, up front, Arizona just got mashed last week against Oregon. So I think Khalil Tate is good enough to win this game, no matter what his defense does. So I think I'm going to agree. I'm going to take Arizona by a field goal and a shootout just as well. So yeah, we're going to go, you said 45-42?
Yep.
I'm going to say 41-38.
41-38.
Yep.
Okay.
Agree. Very specifically agree.
Fun game. Fun week, really. It's rivalry week.
Yeah.
In the world of college football. Got to throw those records out, Dan. Like I said, a bunch of other games that we just don't have time to get to because we'd be here all night talking about college football. Thank you again to everyone out there who has been emailing in your stories to solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know how you listen, where you listen, the odd circumstances under which you became a Solid Verbal listener. Let us know. We're going to pick out some of our favorites and give away a couple free shirts.
How you became a listener, where you listen. Yeah.
Give people what, another week? Figure that out?
I think so. Yeah. Well, the green shirt, I don't believe, will be on sale by the time people listen to the show, but I think we should be able to finagle one of those shirts for you if that's the show you prefer. And then the other older retro design, the radio design, which I love, I think it's super cool, that is still available for a while still. So either one, we'll be able to get you one. And yeah, there's not much time left, but I would grab one if you'd like one. Email us your story. We do have, if I have a request, we don't have a voicemail of this week because we're recording early and we did not give Adam a heads up. But I will see if he still wants to do one and we'll post it on Twitter and Facebook. He will be in Orlando. So tweet him your Orlando food recommendations. I have a request, Ty.
Oh, okay.
I didn't anticipate having to do this, but I'd love for you to drop that biting, nibbling, nipping, gnawing drum and fife real quick.
Dan, it's back! It's back from the dead! We thought it was dead!
Here it is, Ty. Thought that was the end of Pat League? Wrong! Lehigh in the FCS playoffs.
Wow!
Ty, they're playing Stony Brook.
They're playing Stony Brook.
I'm as shocked as you. Playing Stony Brook. I looked up Stony Brook's notable alumni. And this is what came back. Joy Behar.
Okay.
You remember Joy Behar from The View and Headline News?
Yeah, sure.
That and Joe Nathan. Remember Joe Nathan from the Minnesota Twins?
Yeah, speaking of Jose Mesa complexes, Joe Nathan had a little bit of one towards the end of his career.
That is true. That he did struggle later on, as per my own very bad memory. But the good news is, he's all in on Stony Brook. He donated $500,000.
Really?
The Stony Brook, I think, Pirates, they play at Joe Nathan Field.
How about this?
Yeah.
Let's say Stony Brook goes up early. Lehigh finds a way to creep back in. They overcome a fourth quarter deficit as Stony Brook pulls a retro Joe Nathan and loses the game. Lehigh goes on to get creamed by James Madison a week from now. What do you say?
We agree!
Yeah!
I'm all in on that.
Let's do it, baby.
Hell yeah, Ty.
All right. Give me the Mountain Hawks.
Here's my question. I actually have a final question because it's Thanksgiving week.
Yes, please.
Who are the top three people that you will be sharing Thanksgiving meals with? So you're doing two, right?
I'm doing two.
You do a Ty side and a Solid Wife Kate side, right?
Yeah, it's correct. It's actually Ty's birthday as well on Thanksgiving.
So give me your top three people that you are least excited to spend your birthday with. No, I'm just kidding. That is not a good question. That is not fair. That's putting you on the spot, but
okay.
Do tweet Ty. He will give you the answer to that question.
Thank you for that.
What are you most looking forward to eating at each of these meals?
Pumpkin pie at Mama H's house.
Homemade?
Always homemade.
Okay, we do not do homemade pies. We are lazy, but okay.
I am one of those human beings like Mel Kiper Jr. who could eat a pumpkin pie a day. You've heard that about Mel
Kiper. Does he do that? Is that a thing?
Apparently that's a thing. Mel Kiper Jr. eats one pumpkin pie every day.
It's disgusting. Explains so much.
I could probably do that if I truly wanted to. I love pumpkin pie. So pumpkin pie is my obvious first answer.
How are Mel Kiper's insides not just sludge?
I have no idea. They could be. But pumpkin pie would probably be number one on the power rankings.
At Mama H's.
That's correct. And when I go to Kate's side of the family, it's like a pineapple stuffing.
Oh, okay. I like that. Salty, sweet? Sure.
Salty, sweet?
Do you find yourself having to limit your intake knowing you have two considerable meals?
I just sort of assume that by the end of the day, you're going to have to wheel me back home. Especially on my birthday now, where I think we'll have to kick it up a notch in terms of, you know, sweets consumption. Yeah, it'll be a rough food day. The inners probably won't be right for a couple days, but, you know, it's once a year. You just got to go all out.
Yeah, we're doing our half Chinese, half American Thanksgiving. It'll be wonderful. Getting the Peking turkey, some barbecue pork fried rice. I think Dave's family might be bringing over a braised brisket as well. We're all over the place. But here's the thing that is tying both of our Thanksgivings to the live show that we're going to do in Atlanta. We both went into this Thanksgiving break thinking, we got to train on the ping pong tables.
That's right. That's 100% right.
And you might not be able to.
No. My training partner is currently on the mend. Uncle Joe is on the mend. He's got some sort of issue that is preventing him from playing ping pong, which means there's a very good chance you will have at least some training under your belt, and I will be coming cold off the bench.
Oh, man. Yeah, we have a table at home. I'm going to play a little bit with my little brother. I have my goggles. I took him out yesterday to pack them.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited for this time.
Will you be playing with your illegal sandpaper paddle?
I will be playing with sanctioned equipment.
Okay. Because I'm a stickler for that sort of thing.
So sanctioned is in like official equipment. I will not be playing with black market paddles.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, I can beat you with the sandpaper paddles. It did last time, but...
Didn't have the goggles.
Okay. Fair enough.
We will stream it, right?
Absolutely.
We'll try to stream it on Facebook or Instagram or something. Okay. Just making sure.
We'll come up with something. I'm excited to play. It'll be fun.
Take some pictures. Thanksgiving. Post them.
You know it. All right. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, he is headed out to California to enjoy Thanksgiving with his family. For myself, Ty Hildebrand, I'll be hanging here in Eastern PA, spending time with the family as well. And to all of you out there, wherever your travels might take you, wherever you'll be spending Thanksgiving, whether it's here, whether it's abroad, please do have a happy and a safe Thanksgiving. We will talk to you all on Sunday. Enjoy your week. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy college football. And stay solid.
Peace.